small town music. This is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away, a song away, a song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis.
And I'm Kyle Dotson.
And Kyle joining us today in the Zoom room from the state of New York. The guy's name is Troy Torreson. He's been waiting to do this for about 5 months now. So let's bring him in. Troy, how you doing?
Great. Great today. Thanks, guys.
So Troy,
can't wait to be here. This has really been exciting.
So Troy, where are you in New York currently in the state?
Currently, I am in my apartment building. We are a one block away from the famous Mud Club, which is the subject of the show, which is in Lower Manhattan. It's if you know Manhattan at all, New York City, it's south of Canal Street, basically. That's one way of looking at Lower Manhattan. Some people go further north to, you know, 14th Street, and anything below that is downtown. But we're pretty far downtown here, which is been an interesting time the last 7 months or so.
I'm sure
since things have been locked down. Yeah.
So
that was one of the reasons why we talked about doing the show.
And here's the reason Troy's here. Yeah. I did a Patreon. Was it a Patreon contest? It's a Patreon contest where if you win, it was just a random drawing. And if you win, you get to pick the topic and you get to co-host virtually. And Troy won this thing. And I swear to God, it was back in May. And we've been trying to get this on the books for all these months. It's all my fault. I would actually forget about it. And then it would just jump in my head. And then I would send Troy an email and say, Troy, I haven't forgotten about it, even though I actually did forget about it. And so eventually we got it all worked out. And Troy, the title of the episode, are we just calling it The Mud Club? Or do you have some better title? Not that that's not a good title, but I mean, do you have something, or it's just The Mud Club?
I think you said The Mud Club and beyond, I think we were saying, because it is a little bit up past just the bands that would play there. But
gotcha.
I think there's this whole interesting time that I was thinking about it, because I think that interesting time in New York, the late 70s to the early 80s, that's kind of the time I look back on as recent history of New York culture. And it was, a lot of it was because, you know, New York was cheap. People, artists could live here. They could afford to live here. And it was really the last time that happened.
Yeah.
And I was sort of thinking about right now, New York might become cheap again. You know, some people are talking about these cities being dead, and there's so many empty storefronts. And I'm hoping that some of the cool culture that was created can come back, because right now, if a young artist type, it's a really hard place to live.
And so Troy, again, Troy's in New York. I'm in California. And Kyle, you are in
San Antonio,
Texas. This is crazy. Look at this technology. It's like the Jetsons.
They're triangulating.
Yeah. And Troy, how long have you been in New York, Troy? All your life? Did you born and raised?
No, I was born in the Minneapolis suburban area. And then I spent some time in Chicago. So I have some sort of torn loyalties between those two cities. And then moved to New York in the mid 90s. So I've been here long enough to probably be confused when I get asked the question, where are you from?
And are you married? Do you have kids? Are you single?
Yeah, I'm married. I've been living with my wife here since, as I said, about 20 years, and in the same apartment. And we have a 17-year-old daughter who's a budding musician.
Excellent. That's great. And have you introduced some of this Mud Club music to her?
That's kind of a funny, maybe that's a good segue into something, but with very little success. I think, you know, I played some of this in the car, and my wife, you know, we'll make a few comments about it later in some of the songs, but, you know, does not necessarily go over well with the more pop sensibilities of my people I live with.
So when I first asked you about the Mud Club, I said, oh, is it like CBGBs? And you were like, well, yes and no. Is it because the more well-known bands came out of CBGBs, like Talking Heads, Ramones, Blondie, Television, and maybe not so well bands came out of the Mud Club?
Yeah, I think some of those bands, you know, performed there.
Sure.
I mean, the first opening night, B-52s played. So they did have some bands that were like more popular. But yeah, I mean, what happened is, I think, is that the scene around CBGB's kind of hardened into punk. It kind of became a formula, and people wanted more and more of that kind of like, you know, hardcore.
Yeah.
And, you know, people started decamping into other places to get away from that because it got a little bit too macho. You know? I mean, you know, punk gets a little bit aggressive with, you know, people moshing and all that. And I think that some of these more artistic types moved into other spaces just to try different things. And so you had this real flourishing of clubs just all over the place in Lower Manhattan, and some uptown as well, like the Peppermint Lounge, Danceteria. You had dance clubs like Paradise Garage. You had, you know, queer clubs like Pyramid. There was just so many interesting things going on at that time. And it was pretty much anybody seemingly could just open up a club. It seemed like, you know, there were all these empty spaces, all these old buildings that nobody had any use for. So I think that's one of the reasons why it seems like an interesting confluence of people coming to the city attracted by the music scene and also just kind of changing and saying, oh, that's old hat. We're going to try something new over here.
So this wouldn't be a club that had a bar because you would have to get a liquor license and all that. Was it just you could just bring your own beer in and whatever?
No, it did have a bar.
Oh, it did.
Most of these places were bars. Yeah. And they had a cover charge, and they had something like a DJ booth and all that sort of stuff, a dance floor at Mud Club, you know. So it was a proper club. It, of course, the neighbors hated it. I'm glad it's not open right now, because I live a block away. I'd be hearing all the people smoking and talking and having parties outside. In a way, it's I'm now a grumpy middle-aged person, so I'm sure it would be much less popular today.
And it
only lived for 1978 to 1982 or so.
Yeah, so only like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And,
and then basically after that, the city kind of got priced out of that. I mean, everything got too expensive.
Let's preface this with Kyle. Kyle, in the history of Rock Solid, what's the worst episode that you ever produced in regard to the music that you didn't like? What was it?
Oh, it was Dire Straits, for sure.
It was Dire Straits, for sure.
I like Dire Straits. Well, Dire Straits is like dad rock, you know, like I like Steely Dan. I'm a very interesting test case for you, because I think I like this weird wimpy music on one side and then the kind of edgy stuff on the other side. And then a lot of stuff in the middle, I don't really like too much.
Well, here's the setup for this, Troy. Kyle sends me a text the other day, and the text says, "Oh no, I think we have a new winner for my least favorite episode."
Music wise,
yeah, nothing
totally
to do with you, Troy.
I was just listening snippets of things when I was.
Don't couch your feelings, like, oh, Kyle. Man, don't.
Like, this is a loose base on everything. And then I looked. I was like, "Did you send me the same song 13 times?"
Oh,
based on how they all started, but no.
No, he's making a joke, Troy. He's saying they all sounded the same to him.
Oh yeah. Wow! Well,
it made AC/DC look like diverse. Bowie.
I mean, there are definitely some clear the room. There's some clear the room artists in this group where
I can't
you put on
wait.
Music and people just like flee. And I've definitely, I don't play a lot of that sort of thing myself. So I've tried to pick the poppier numbers and some of these songs that are maybe a hard listen at first. They're a hard listen at first. They kind of grow on you now. I'm sure you all have examples of this where it's like at first, like for instance, in my case, the first time I heard the Ramones, I was like, this is so hard. I can't take this. This is so anti-music. This is so non-commercial. I can't handle it. And now it's on AT&T commercials.
Yeah.
You know, now it's the most bubblegummy, poppy sounding stuff.
Yep.
And it's like, what happened? Did I change or what happened? And I think there's a lot of things like that, you know, you kind of grow older or whatever, and you just kind of like start hearing things and stuff that you hated earlier, and you know, you change, and like you know, it's maybe we'll hope to turn somebody on to some of this. I mean, maybe one or two of these tracks will catch on with people and they'll go, oh, I'll dig a little deeper and find out about some of that stuff.
Well, I'm excited to get into it right now, Troy. Do you want to tell us whatever you want to tell us, Troy? You want to give us history? You want to tell us whatever you want to tell us about the band or anything? We're an open book, and and what's the go ahead.
Well, you know, setting the context of the time, right? So the late 70s, you know, there was this super, you know, disco, you know, disco was huge. And so a lot of this music is kind of post-disco, anti-disco, mm-hmm. but dance music. And then there was also at the same time, you know, bands like Foreigner, you know, super produced, had, you know, very popular rock bands and the Cars, you know, new wave music was kind of coming in with things like Blondie. And so I think people that sort of wanted to stand out, they were like, well, how do we kind of do something more arty and different and more less commercial than that, you know? And what it led to is kind of more, maybe more interesting than what it was. Cause right. I think a lot of bands like Nirvana, industrial music can trace its roots to a lot of this stuff. Noise rock, like Sonic Youth, you know, kind of got its start. You know, there were a lot of direct descendants and indirect descendants that I think are the most interesting. And of course, the Mud Club also attracted amazing artists like Jean-Michel Basquiat, you know, worked there, played in a band that sometimes played there. You had incredible filmmakers like Jim Jarmusch, you know, hanging out there. People like Steve Buscemi, the actor, was hanging out there with, you know, just an interesting mix of people and just an interesting time in the city. So I just wanted to kind of, as a tribute to that time and that place, have the show and this music.
I love it. This isn't in my wheelhouse at all. And I'm so excited. If you could.
Yeah, that's another reason is, you know, I kind of looked in your database of like what you haven't talked about and bands you've never really covered. And most of these bands, I think, have never been on your show.
That's good. That's a good thing. Yeah. If you could pinpoint and give us who would be the most popular Mud Club band, if there is such a thing?
Yeah.
Is it Dire Straits?
Come here, you are. Was that just a drop?
Yeah, what happened, Kyle? Did you?
No, that was an ad on this thing. I didn't have my ad blocker turned on. So sorry.
Well, can I ask what it was an ad for?
Oh, maybe that's some band. Okay, so
I think it was a car or a beer commercial.
Oh, are we gonna get ad revenue from that since we put that out there real quickly?
I hope so.
I hope so. That would be great. Okay,
so I'd say the most popular thing that most people have heard probably is there was a band called Liquid that used a lot of percussion and a lot of like instruments that are very bass heavy, and it's very good like funky music, and it's been sampled by you know, one of the biggest rap songs of all time. So I think that's a song that most people will hear and go, oh, I know that. That's from you know, one of the earliest big rap songs.
Okay, cool.
White Lines, which was a big rap hit.
And what are we getting?
That's not very popular.
And what's the first song on the playlist today?
I believe we have Richard Hell and the Voidoids with the Blank Generation. Now, they're kind of like a pre-Mud Club band. So they're kind of more CBGB's era, older, I think, and was in the band Television, like you mentioned them. They're kind of CBGB's scene. But the term Blank Generation, I think, kind of defines this group. It's kind of like we want to X everything out. We want to, you know, it's the sort of catch-all name for this music is No Wave, which was sort of like an anti-movement to say, you know, we don't want to be like punks. We don't want to be commercial like New Wave. We just want to nullify everything. So that's why the music is so fun to listen to.
All right. Well, let's listen to this first song. And I have heard of Richard Hell, so maybe I'm going to enjoy this. You ready, Kyle?
Fascinating to observe what the mirror does, but when I
okay, this is an on the fly review. I like that song a lot. That was cool. I liked how it took a little time to for the song to happen. And then once it kicked in, I liked it. Kyle?
Yeah, it's got a little swing to it. It's got a little punk rock swagger. I mean, Richard Hell is, interesting character, kind of not super successful in the long run, but, he's credited with creating the punk rock look because he wore sort of like, old army fatigues and would safety pin them together. And Malcolm McLaren went back to London after seeing them play at CBGB's and was like, you all have to look like this, man. This is the cool look. And people, sort of copied that look from Richard Hell.
And did he safety pin them together because they were falling apart, or did he safety pin them? So he wasn't doing that to create a look. It was a necessity.
Right. I mean, that's usually how fashion works, right? There's some sort of functional reason for something, and then somebody misinterprets it and overstylizes it, and it becomes kind of like a fashion statement.
Like, for example, if I'm a hillbilly and my pants are falling down, I tie it up with a rope.
Yeah, or your pants are falling around your ankles, and that becomes a look because, I guess, prisoners? I don't know. I don't know why that pants falling down the look is still a look, but, there are all sorts of fashion choices that people make that I don't think there's any good explanation for, but apparently that is a real story.
Kyle, Troy and I are older than you are. When I see a kid that his pants are falling, his pants are down around his butt and his underwear is sticking out, I think that looks ridiculous. What do you think as a 30-year-old man?
I don't like that. I come from it as I wouldn't like it if my pants were falling down.
It doesn't even look comfortable.
Like, I find it would be, uncomfortable.
You have to walk in a way then that keeps them from falling down.
Yeah, I have a few pair of pants that I like have to wear a belt with. And if I forget the belt and I'm walking, it's like super annoying to like keep
hiking them up.
And I'm just like, I couldn't do this.
All right. And then the next question is, what did you think of the Richard Hell song?
Oh, yeah, I like that a lot better than the first 5 seconds that I heard of it when I was queuing it up. So
maybe you queued these up and you didn't listen to all the songs, so you're going to get it.
Oh, no, I just like the heads and tails.
You did a snap judgment.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Troy, what's next? We like that one. We're all in on the Mud Club right now. Now, three songs in, we might hate it.
All right.
But right now we're all in.
Am I muted?
Nope.
Okay.
I can hear you now.
I can hear you.
Sorry, technical difficulties here. The next song is Contort Yourself by James Chance. He and the Contortions. He's kind of a, I think you could do a whole show if you haven't already on the saxophone in rock and roll. Like he was a saxophone guy. And I think he'd be on the, more punk rock side of the saxophone. Those two things usually don't go together.
No, maybe punk rock and saxophone doesn't go together.
Well, that's about what we're here. About what we're to hear.
Okay. Okay, Kyle, let me hear it.
It's better than pleasure. It's more than pain. I got what it takes to drive you insane. Now it is the time to lose all control. Distort your body. Ow! It twists your soul. Ow! Control yourself. Ow! Control yourself.
Sounded like someone was farting. The noise that the horn was making sounded like a. I didn't hate that either, though.
No, it's kind of fun. I mean, apparently that they were like a real riot live. Like, I think that's one of those things that doesn't really maybe translate in recordings. Mm-hmm. Apparently it was.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move.
Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
It's quite a fist flying, confront the audience, quite a show. So it's one of those, I guess you had to be there kind of bands. So I don't really love a lot of their music, but that song, I think it has some positive elements to it that, you know, it'll wake you up. It's got a little bit of a tonic flavor to it. Like, you know, contort yourself, get out of bed.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of bands like that.
It almost has like a James Brown feel to it.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funky. I mean, it's definitely, you know, got a beat that you can dance to, as they used to say on the Dick Clark Show. But it's not pop music by any means. So no. it's a bit of a vinegar rather than a sweet tune.
And it's also very DIY and like a little bit lo-fi.
Yeah, and I think that's a good segue to the next song, which is, you know, has that very lo-fi early synthesizer vibe to it, which you know, I think is one of the elements of a lot of these bands. Almost none of these bands recorded with any kind of, you know, spending a week in the studio on one song budget. You know, these were all done, like, even when Brian Eno, you know, came to New York to record a lot of these artists, they just basically recorded live and didn't do any studio trickery at all. So it is very raw.
Well, that's good sometimes too, because you know, like sometimes a band is the best when they're live. And if a producer is able to capture that in the studio, then those records kick ass. So let's see what happens with this band. What's the band? What's the song?
The next song is by a band called Suicide. And the song is Dream Baby Dream.
All right. Take on this song, the cacophony of I don't know what instruments those were that we were hearing, but if you put those a little bit down in the mix and you bring that vocal up a little bit and then you have Chris Isaak sing that vocal, that's probably a hit song of some sort.
Maybe. I mean, so you can totally hear you know, some of the things that, you know, these guys influence, like the Cars, mm-hmm. with their synthesizers. You can, in fact, the Cars directly ripped off some of their stuff. Depeche Mode, you know, that sort of twangy little synthesizer sound from the early days of like synth bands, like Soft Cell, those kind of bands, you know, they're definitely part of that whole movement. But they were really early. I mean, they were like, I think they started around 1970. Mm-hmm. So it's like they were playing this and they got... Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that's so interesting about these guys is how brave you had to be to get on stage and do these droney synthesizer songs at a time when everybody was playing guitars. I mean, they were just literally booed off the stage so many times. So there's a lot of guts involved in doing something that's just totally unique. Like, they were not following many trends. They were not part of some, large vanguard of bands doing this. They were out there on their ledge.
But was a band like this accepted at the Mud Club? Like, you could go to the Mud Club and do anything and you wouldn't be booed off the stage there.
That's right. So I think that's about you know, these kind of artsier spaces were safe spaces, you know, for some of these more out there acts. Because people went to that place expecting uncommercial things.
Yeah.
They expected things that were, you know, for, you know, the Midwest would be considered weirdos, you know, that kind of thing. It was kind of like a club for weirdos.
I wonder, were these artists, did they want to break through and be successful, or were they anti-success also?
I think a lot of them were anti-success. So especially like the next artist we're going to play, you know, literally undermined themselves at every turn, you know, to not be signed by a major label, to not listen to a producer, to not, you know, follow any commercial path that, you know, be like what Blondie did. No, do the opposite.
All right. And who is it? Who are we hearing?
The next artist we have is Lydia Lunch, who was fronting here the band Teenage Jesus and the Jerks. And the song is I Woke Up Dreaming.
No. Okay. All right. When you watch a movie and someone's trapped behind enemy lines and they have to play some music to make them give up the information, I'm giving it up immediately. That sounds like a bunch of like you just threw instruments into a nursery school and said, have at it, kids. But wow.
Yeah, that is wow, isn't it? I mean,
that is the opposite of Blondie. You're right. That's the opposite of Blondie.
Yeah. Can you imagine the guts it would take, you know, to get on stage? Yeah, totally. And to me, it's very gutsy to go on stage and like, yeah, I'm good.
If I saw that band on the stage doing that, I would think, well, this is a goof. This isn't, they don't really think that they're performing music. They're fucking with us.
Yeah. It basically, I think, crossed into performance art. You know, it crosses into, it's not really meant to be music in that they didn't learn chords or, you know, what music really is.
Chords or singing or music.
Those are old fashioned.
Yeah. This is the first one where I'm like, no, I would never want to hear that song again.
Yeah. So we're starting to cross into the noise start of the program right now, where it's the bands that get into the area of what I was talking about with clear the room music, where if you put this record on, you know, it's like that Yoko Ono or something, just like Captain Beefheart, where you just go, oh, what is going on? You have to recalibrate your ears. And I cannot imagine anybody listening to this for fun. You know, it's definitely an acquired taste.
Kyle,
a taste I really haven't acquired, but I just wanted to give a kind of like, she was definitely a big part of the scene, and this kind of music, with, you know, noise, you know, kind of like Metal Machine music, that Lou Reed album. I don't know if you've ever tried to listen to that, but
I have it because it came in a box set, but I put on about 30 seconds of it and I'm like, I can't listen to this. What were you going to say, Kyle?
Do we talk about where the name of the Mud Club came from?
Yeah, I don't think we did, but it's Mud was a doctor who apparently worked to save John Wilkes Booth after, I guess that's his biggest claim to fame. And the building that the Mud Club was in was owned by a famous artist, Ross Bleckner. You know, talking about art on a podcast is a little silly, but
no, it's good.
But anyway, it was definitely, there is some history to the area, into the building. Friends who started it kind of immediately fell out, and some of their, you know, there's all these kind of turmoils. I have, one of the things I was going to do is provide, you know, for your listeners, we'll do a little prize bag of, some of these books I got, about the club and stuff. This one.
Oh, look at that.
Richard Bosch. Yeah, that looks... he was like the doorman, and it's a big, thick book.
That is a nice book.
It is a good book. Yeah. And then this book I actually really liked a lot. This is called Life and Death on the New York Dance Floor. This also very big book.
Yeah, people will like these books.
Yeah, no, this would be a good giveaway. And it's and then the third one is I have a vinyl copy sealed of the Eno album I was talking about.
Nice.
Oh.
No New York, which so we can mail that to some of your fans.
So Troy, you can send that stuff to me and then I'll send it to the winners. That way you don't have to send it to three different people.
It's a deal.
All right, cool. Well, thank you. Those are great prizes.
Yeah, cool.
And I want to say, I don't know if you got this email, Pat. Troy sent what I can only describe as a dissertation on the Mug Club with so hearing him talk about this, you know, you obviously know your stuff and aren't like us idiots when we're like, I don't know, maybe Kiss was bored this day or whatever. Like,
I don't know why he's a cat. I mean, I don't think there's dog makeup, so he went with the cat.
Yeah, although having read these books, it's kind of goes in one ear and out the other. I definitely would never pass my PhD dissertation on these stuff. Way beyond. There's a lot to know, and people who lived it, of course, would say, "What's that idiot talking about it for?" You know, people like in some of these bands, you know, they'd be much better people to talk to than me. I'm no Rob Halford on the subject of this stuff, but
Troy, let me ask you something because we didn't get into this. First of all, you look intelligent. Doesn't he look intelligent, Kyle? Troy looks intelligent.
Yeah, you look like you would be invited to any panel to speak about whatever.
Whatever, yeah.
You know, like, here's our expert, Troy, on...
So what I want to know, Troy, is what do you do? What is your work?
Well, I've been a copywriter, creative director, pretty much since I moved to New York. So I've been in for different levels of the advertising business, basically. And about 4 years ago, I switched into consulting.
Okay.
So I'm still on the creative side of things, but for a big consulting company.
Cool. So a smart guy who's slumming it today with Kyle and I. Kyle, yeah, thank you.
Literally took PTO today, paid time off to do this and other things because it's my birthday. And also,
happy
birthday, Troy.
Thank you. Thank you. And also, it's the anniversary of the Mud Club opening. It opened on Halloween. So we're right around the,
Well, timely.
All these dates kind of came together beautifully.
And Kyle dressed as Freddy Krueger today for Halloween. So that's good. I love your sweater, Freddy.
I wore a Tim Burton shirt.
Is one of your arms like really long and strange, like a Tim Burton movie? Yeah, there you go. Kyle Scissorhands. All right. all right, Troy, hit us with another one.
Yeah, so the next song is by a band called Mars. They're probably the most iconic, I shouldn't even say iconic, because none of these are icons that anybody would recognize, but they're the most, what's the word, representative?
Okay.
Of this group, and they were, this song is called 3E by Mars.
Is there a specific out cue, Kyle? Do you have a specific out cue, or am I?
No, I don't. So if you just want to point dismissively,
okay.
But we haven't gone over 130 yet, so.
Okay, cool. Now here's the deal. I couldn't understand anything that the singer was saying. Not one word of that.
Not one word.
Yeah, not one word.
I had to Google those lyrics too. They're cool lyrics actually, but it's totally unintelligible.
And then when you brought up the Ramones earlier. Yeah. When you hear that compared with the Ramones could have turned up at Arnold's and played Fonzie's birthday party compared to that.
I mean, yeah, it's like the Ramones with more noise and more distortion and more and worse vocals, and it's like the Ramones turned to 11 or whatever, you know. It's just more intensely punk in some ways, but that's actually one of the more poppy songs they have. It just gets less and less easy to listen to after that, so their catalog is pretty tough.
And how many albums does a band like Mars have? How many albums do they have?
Like zero.
It's just singles.
They were on
compilations.
Yeah, exactly. They're on some compilations. Okay. Things they mainly released singles, I believe. And they, you know, like I said, these guys were not commercially oriented. They were artists.
What was the longevity for some of these bands?
Like, in some cases, weeks. I have lists of these bands that, like, you know, are much less successful than the ones that actually recorded. You know, and it was a very small, short little period of time, but I think Mars was together for a few years. They were one of the more together bands, but I mean, Sonic Youth, you could say is one of these groups, and they're still,
they're still going
until pretty recently anyway. Yeah. Kicking.
I think that was the only, name I recognized when I was looking this.
Yeah. And it's kind of debatable whether they were part of the scene, cause they started, you know, later. So, they were definitely influenced by it. That's why I kind of put them at the end.
But if you're a big fan of the Mud Club and you want to tout someone, you're probably going to say, well, Sonic Youth came out of it.
Kind of, I don't think they ever played there, but they played and, you know, that setup of clubs around it.
Gotcha.
You know, I think the Mud Club probably had closed by that point, but, definitely they were one of the people that came out of that scene.
And, we've heard some women singing so far. Were there a lot of women in this scene? It feels dangerous to me. I don't want my kid going over there.
Yeah, I mean, Lower Manhattan was dangerous. So we had Lydia Lunch, who is a female singer.
Right.
And some of these bands had females in the band. So I believe Mars has some, China Berg, I guess, is one of the people in the band. So yeah, some of these bands have female members. And it was also kind of a white, you know, frankly, just like the punk scene, very white, you know, very kind of like... you know, a lot of straight white males getting their aggressions out. But it was, you know, one of the reasons why it was so male is, you know, Lower Manhattan was a very dangerous place to be as a single female. But, you know, the photographs and things I've seen from the various books I've looked at, there were more women than you might think. And there was even more diversity than you might think. Like I mentioned, Jean-Michel Basquiat. I don't think the scene was, you know, overtly racist or anything like that.
Right.
In fact, probably the opposite. These are the more the artistic types. These are the more liberal types, if you will, than the punks that were hanging out at CBGB's. But it's, of course, all this is hard to say. I wasn't there.
If you were to tell me that every single artist we're listening to today, they all died of a drug overdose, I would believe it. Because that's what, when I hear this music, I'm like, oh, this guy's not alive anymore.
Yeah, I actually can't say for a fact, who was a junkie and who wasn't, but it's kind of appalling how many people in this scene had very bad drug problems. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, in general, the whole scene kind of imploded, you know, is like so many rock and roll scenes. People start getting into heavy drugs and it just kind of falls apart.
We're in a pandemic now where we're wearing masks and I wear gloves if I go out to some places, you know, if I need to shop for something. Can you imagine the filth that was in the Mud Club and in CBGB's? Like if you had to go to the bathroom at CBGB's, I mean,
yeah, that bathroom is actually still in existence. They saved it as like a relic. And there's now a John Varvatos, you know, fancy clothing store in the old CBGB space, but they did save the bathroom and some other little moments of
they cleaned it up though, right? Or did they?
Oh my God, I'm sure. Yeah, of course it doesn't reek, but you know, they saved the graffiti. But some of the, you know, you get some of the flavor of how toilet-like a lot of these places were.
Yeah.
But also you look at the pictures of New York in the 70s and it was really bombed out. There was something like 350 fires in Lower Manhattan in 1 year.
Wow.
You know, just whole buildings were being set on fire by their landlords to collect the insurance.
Oh my God.
More dead than alive, you know, and that's, it's kind of amazing the city pulled out of that dive.
Yeah.
But in a way, what it's turned into, you know, this kind of like shiny condos for rich people, you know, that never even live here.
Yeah.
You know, that's a bit sad too.
It's going the exact opposite way.
Yeah. I think cities in general, I hope, as I was saying at the beginning, like, I hope it sort of starts to, you know, we get some of these clubs that were closed down by neighbors like me, back, you know, I hope we get some of the nightlife in our cities back, and some of the more interesting artistic types can afford to move into cities, whether those are in Cleveland or some other place. They don't all have to be in New York. I mean, that's kind of silly. You know, certainly Chicago also went through a similar renaissance when I was there. It was really cheap when I moved there. When I left, it was starting to get really pricey and fancy, and there were ATMs all over the place, and, you know, all these sort of dangerous neighborhoods that were the, you know, where the cool kids lived.
Yeah.
Became where the fancy people wanted to live.
By the way, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Professor Troy Torreson. He's giving us a history of the Mud Club, and he's lived he's lived it, and he's taking us through the history. Troy, what's the next tune?
Yeah, the next tune is.
Are the songs getting worse, or are we gonna go up? Are we gonna?
Well, they're gonna get different.
They're gonna get different. Okay.
The next tune is also a hard listen, but it's by a band called DNA, which was a guy named Arto Lindsay, who's in the Ambitious Lovers. You might have heard of them. But
I'm an ambitious lover, Troy.
Excellent. but this song is called Blonde Redhead, and this song, a band named themselves Blonde Redhead after this song.
I love the title. That's great. Okay, now with this one, I did like the music at first. It had kind of a chug-a-chug, and it had a little bit of like a country tinge under there. And then when the singer started, the first thing I thought of was, oh, this guy's on a ledge of a building and he's ready to jump. And people
a lot of anxiety coming through there. That makes me, listening to that makes me anxious.
It's that puts me on edge a little bit, that one. Kyle, what thoughts from Kyle?
I'm not a huge fan of that. I'm not a huge fan of that vocalist either.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked where the music was going, and then it didn't go anywhere. Like, it just like kind of just kept, but the vocals were horrendous.
I feel
might not be as bad as Dire Straits though.
I feel like
I'm at least awake.
I feel like any of this music, if Bowie wrote lyrics, like you said, Kyle, and sang over it, it would be amazing. We would find something to grab hold of, but maybe these singers and lyricists didn't have the chops. Although Troy said, if you can read the lyrics, sometimes they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that this, they're going for an effect here. They're going to try to sound like, you know, like art music, anxiety, you know, that's kind of like an actor on stage, you know, panicking, you know, whatever. It has that feeling of like a performance. It's performance art versus music, I think.
And Steve Buscemi's hanging out in the back of this club watching all this.
Yeah, and David Bowie is trying to get in the front. There's a story about Bowie getting turned away or at the door because they thought that the guy at the door didn't believe it was David Bowie because David Bowie should be tall, and they were like, didn't realize that David Bowie was just like 5'9" or whatever.
Yeah.
Their image of Bowie was like 6'5". and so Bowie stood out front in the cold, apparently.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Yeah, you know, with everybody else waiting to get in. It was kind of a hot ticket about a year after it opened, apparently. It was almost impossible unless you knew somebody to get through the door.
So were they making money there?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of these clubs, you know, did pretty well for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, the famous one, of course, is Studio 54, where they right. made so much money. They were filling dollars into garbage bags and putting them in the ceiling until the feds got wind of that and found some of the garbage bags.
That's incredible.
And shut that down. So the disco world was dealt a huge blow at that moment. But, you know, I think, some of these clubs made money, but, you know, of course the partners started fighting over it.
Yeah.
That's always the case.
And the bands probably weren't making money.
No, I don't think so. I don't think most of these bands made a dime, really. I mean, if they did, they made drinking money, you know, that kind of thing.
Right. Put it all back into the club.
Or in your veins.
In your veins. Kyle, Troy, what's next?
Next is Liquid with Cavern.
All right, I like this a lot so far. When's it going to break bad? My favorite one so far. I like that one a lot. Yeah.
I like that too. As I said, that's been sampled famously. There was a huge lawsuit over it, but the people they sued went out of business before they could collect. So that's a sad story.
Yeah.
That's funky music. And they have a couple, Liquid has a couple of really great tracks that I think if you like that funky kind of dark haunted, it's like haunted disco.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool music.
Kyle, write that down, haunted disco. Let's pitch that to Netflix. We'll see if we can get Mike Flanagan on board for that. Haunted disco. Write it down. Yeah, that was good. I like that one a lot. Liquid. Now they must have albums.
I don't believe so. If they are, maybe they do. Yeah. Okay. Maybe they do, but I know it mainly on compilations.
All right.
Again, they were like singles, a lot of them, and they were actually, you know, on this really influential record label called 99 Records. 99 Records was, a New York label that had a lot of these weird, indie bands, and, it was a hangout for people. And the Beastie Boys, I guess, met Rick Rubin there, I think, is one of the stories.
Wow, that's a real good story, because look at that.
Yeah. Yeah, and then this kind of music that you're hearing, this kind of funky, that sound, you can really hear a lot of the club music that kind of came after disco, like Madonna, with that really heavy bass and that sort of drum machine kind of locked in flavor. I think a lot of this sound, this kind of synthesized dance music sound, you know, it had a big influence on people.
Very nice. I like it. What's next, Troy?
Next is a little other funky side of music, which is a band called ESG, which stands for Emerald, Sapphire, and Gold. And the song is called Moody.
All right. Very percussive. Like, I'm into the drums and the bass, but then a lot of these songs, there's not, like, I'm not hearing a lot of guitar.
No, the last two bands, much more, funky, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I hear a lot of Madonna and that kind of early, that sort of early 80s dance music that was going around, she, you know, borrowed.
And, you know, and I think she had a little bit of success with it, I believe.
Yeah, I've heard of her. Yeah, most people have heard of her, I think. So there definitely was, some successes that came out of these bands that were playing in these small clubs. But unfortunately, ESG didn't really make the kind of money Madonna did.
And the vocals on that song reminded me a little bit of like a Cyndi Lauper type of, voice. Mm-hmm. Because I don't have pictures of these bands, but you've obviously seen them in books and stuff. Were they appealing to look at? Or were they a rough looking group?
I wouldn't, I would say they were mostly like under, they under leveraged their looks if they had looks, what I mean? Like, they didn't try. So I can't think of any of these bands that really, had costumes or, performed with a look per se.
Image wasn't important.
Right. So I think that's one of the big advantages of the new wave acts. Like, bands that really thought about that stuff, like Bauhaus, let's say, or The Cure or something. They had like a look, hair.
Yeah.
Or a band like, of course, Duran Duran, had incredible, visual style and incredible importance of hair and makeup and all that sort of stuff. And most of these bands that we're talking about, I think, were just, strung up in their street clothes and not really thinking about that, or not even thinking about having their instruments being in tune either.
Yeah. I mean, even the Ramones, they wore a costume, jeans, t-shirt, leather jacket, Converse sneakers. That was their
branding, right?
That's
all about knowing who you are and being the same consistently. So people go, oh, that's Johnny.
Yeah.
That's Dee Dee. I know they their hair and their look was the same, and they really were smart about that.
Yeah, they absolutely were.
Yeah. And I think some people, the bands that I'm, most of these bands that I'm playing, I think they looked at that as being, fake. So don't be like that.
Wow. That's great.
And I respect that. I mean, I respect people that kind of look at, rock and roll as being too corporate. And so let's be real. Right. But the mistake is, of course, that people like that stuff.
Let me ask you this, Troy, because I don't, because this will help us a little bit. Who are your top three favorite recording artists? If you had to narrow it down to three, could you do it?
Yeah.
That way we'll know what kind of music you actually like.
Right. No, that's a tough one. I mean,
what if he says Madonna? I like Britney Spears.
I like Madonna. So,
and I like Maroon 5.
I wouldn't say that. Okay. So I'll just go back into my history. Okay. So this is more of a history lesson than it is like right now. Okay. I think right now is tough. I loved Pink Floyd mm-hmm. when I was in high school. They were like my favorite group.
Okay.
And then around college, I loved New Order.
All right.
And then in the, say 2000s or so, I love Radiohead.
All right. That's cool. That's totally cool.
So those are three, and there's some overlap in those kind of bands, but basically that's kind of like alternative-ish, classic rock-ish, you know, but I also, you know, go down a lot of rabbit holes of different things that I like. So, you know, Elliott Smith or, you know, somebody like, you know, people who are like more surprising to you, maybe like I like Bob Marley, you know, there's all sorts of great stuff out there. And so my connection with music wasn't so much one or two artists, but I would make for my friends mixtapes.
Okay.
And I called them variety tapes because they would have everything from, you know, some of the music we're listening to, these very obscure groups, to Smith songs, to, you know, Bulgarian folk music, you know, just all sorts of weird stuff that I would hear about and find out and try to, you know, convince people, hey, check this out.
Thank God Troy didn't pick Bulgarian folk music as our topic today.
Yeah, that's a tough rock and roll sell. I don't think it's rock solid.
Do you, Troy, you have access to live music in New York, not right now, but do you go to shows?
I mainly have gone to see my daughter shows. So she's, you know, got a little scene going with her, that world that she's a part of. So I've seen quite a few artists through her contacts and things. But no, I'm not a big live music guy. I never really was.
Okay.
I'm sort of sad to say it, but I would, you know, go to see shows in college, and I went to shows, you know, occasionally with friends, like to see the Beastie Boys or something mm-hmm. at Madison Square Garden. So I would see shows, but I mean, my main contact with music was, I like recorded music. So I would like going to clubs and things. And so when I was in Chicago, I don't know if you have Cabaret Metro.
Oh yeah. I was there. Many times.
So I would be at the Smart Bar downstairs listening to the DJ versus upstairs listening to the live bands.
Gotcha.
For the most part. I find the live band experience a little bit, you know, you're just sort of facing the stage. And most of the times the bands were kind of boring, frankly. Mm-hmm. I didn't see a lot of great bands sort of by accident. I have a few stories of like walking in just, oh, this is this new band called Smashing Pumpkins and they're playing tonight, you know, but I didn't have many wow moments seeing live music. I generally was sort of disappointed.
Is your daughter a solo artist or is she in a band?
I'd say a little bit of both. She's in a band. Sometimes when she plays live, she sometimes plays with a band. But she can also, you know, singer songwriter kind of stuff. Her name is Emrose and she goes by that band name, Emrose, E-M-M-R-O-S-E.
And is there music on iTunes or online that we can find?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's on Spotify. It's on iTunes. All the platforms.
And is she signed with anyone, like a label, right now, or is it all independent?
She's still independent, but she's got a sync deal. If you know your world of music, so her work could be in commercials and that sort of thing.
All right, cool. Well, let everyone check out Emrose. E-M-M-R-O-S. Okay, check that out, everybody. Let's let her music spike a little bit. Thanks to our listeners.
Yeah. And that's a good segue to the next band, which is called Bush Tetras.
Oh, wait, say that again, Troy.
Bush Tetras.
Okay.
Like the tetra is the fish, I guess. I don't know really where this term comes from, but this is kind of like the closest thing to a no wave girl group.
All right.
They have a song here called Too Many Creeps, which is what women often feel like when they're walking down the street.
And this is going to sound like the Go-Go's, I assume.
A little bit.
Oh, I was just kidding. Let's hear it. All right.
I just don't want to go out in the street. Give me the creep.
That was cool. I could actually hear Debbie Harry sing something like that.
Yeah, it's got a little of that, funk in the background like we had from some of those earlier songs. But yeah, there's some good songs by them. I think they're one of the ones that got away. They kind of imploded, but I think they've had some reunions and things. They got a little college radio play, but, definitely, I think, a good sound, that kind of girl rock band sort of sound I wish there were more bands like that.
I feel like the songs that I'm enjoying, like that one, aren't really indicative of what the Mud Club was about. I think if it started to veer into anything mainstream, then it wasn't Mud Club-esque. Am I right or wrong?
I don't think it was that difficult of a listen to be there. There actually is in one of these books, like a playlist of what the DJ played on a given night, and some of the lists of bands that played, and a lot of them were a little more mainstream and a little more palatable.
Okay,
I wanted to give you a range of things.
I get you,
but that band would play at the Mud Club, and I'm sure it was a good time.
I mean, I could take any genre of music, whether it's folk music or Americana or heavy metal, and I could play you a bunch of shit songs from that genre, and you'd be like, ugh, and then I could play you good songs from that genre, and you'd be like, oh, this is good. So I get it. Okay, I'm getting it now. I'm learning.
Yeah.
Professor Troy Torreson.
I don't think all this is, I'm giving you a sample of a tiny number of these groups that were part of this, and this is meant to be kind of the intro. I think most people will find the deeper you go, the harder it gets.
Okay. All right. Let's move on.
Right. So next we have one of the people that was on one of the earlier bands, Glenn Branca. Now he was a real musician and kind of started as an artist. But
Wait a minute. Really, that makes me laugh, Troy, because it makes it sound like no one else we've heard yet is a real musician. But here's one. Here it is, guys. This guy's the deal.
Well, he became like a kind of a famous composer.
Okay.
You know? So he became like, he started doing these guitar symphonies and basically went in the direction of classical, whatever we call classical music today. But it's like, I think that's an interesting little offshoot of this, of like kind of like super modern classical music, like people like John Cage and those sort of avant-garde composers got into noise, for lack of a better term. And we're about to hear some.
Okay, let's hear some noise.
Symphony number one.
That was rough.
That's rough.
Yeah. It was a little rough.
I like the drums.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Kyle, for being positive.
For once.
Yeah. Let's hear it, Kyle.
Is the whole album like that?
A lot of his stuff is like that. Yeah. It's okay. It's very much.
The whole body of work.
It's meant to kind of wash over you, I think, as a... some of it's easier to listen to than others, but I just wanted to give you a flavor of like the more out there stuff, and it's definitely an acquired taste.
And now, is that something that you would listen to? You would throw that? Okay, good. No, not at all. All right, cool.
No, I just wanted to give a range because I think people might get the wrong idea. They're like, oh, this, why wasn't this pop music celebrated more widely? And it's like, well, there was a lot of stuff like that and a lot of, you know, art spaces downtown that would play, you know, you just sort of walk into the room and hear, you know, 45 amplifiers blasting that and leave the room.
All right. I would think, like, if I walked into that room and there were people that were looking like they were actually enjoying that music, I would not believe it at all. Cause I'm cynical. I'd be like, these people, they don't really like this. This is they're being pretentious. They're pretending that they like it just to feel like they're self-important.
Yeah. Or they're friends with the artist.
Right. Or they're friends with the artist.
Kind of there because they're sort of, they're there to, encourage him and, but you know, he got commissions. He got, a lot of people, I don't know, if he was very charming, but, to me, if you put that on paper and wrote that as musical, you know, wrote that out for the people in your band to say, okay, guys, this is what we're going to be playing tonight. You know, it'd be like, you need some guts to do that.
Yeah.
But,
and on paper, it might be pretty intricate.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think that the people who are influenced by that, like you said, they hear something in that, even though they may not stay for the whole concert, they go, oh, that gives me an idea. And the band that kind of was most inspired by that was the last band, Sonic Youth, which, you know, there is a lot of Glenn Branca in the way they played their guitars, the way they tuned their guitars weirdly. They kind of like, you know, had those sort of angular kind of moments of things speeding up, slowing down, that kind of stuff. And you know, that is kind of like the end point, if you will, for this show and this genre of music, this no wave music. It's a genreless genre, but it's, you know, Sonic Youth really kind of came out of this and I think influenced a lot of bands like Nirvana and bands that also played with noise and feedback and things like that. So the last song is, from the album Confusion is Sex, Kill Your Idols by Sonic Youth.
All right, let's hear it, Kyle. Excellent. Troy, you know your stuff.
I don't know.
Yeah, he's a professor.
I think you can kind of hear that sort of like a synthesis of a lot of the things we're talking about. It's got that sort of, you know, a lot of noise in there, a lot of dissonance, but also there's a pop song in there somewhere, maybe too. And they sort of put it together and they became obviously the most successful band to come out of this.
Absolutely. And it's funny what we didn't hear in any of these songs were, one, two, three, four, like no one counted in. It was just, here we go. We're off and running to the avant-garde races.
It's pretty hard. And, you know, they obviously toned themselves down, I think more than most of these, people because they had a long career, you know, and it's like they tried different things and some of them were much, much poppier than that.
Well, Troy, it was a long time coming to record this, but I hope you had fun.
Definitely.
And here's what I want to do, since we're out of songs, and even though it doesn't go in with the theme of the show today, I would like to play out with an Emrose song. So is there one that you can recommend? And then I will purchase that, and I will tack it on to the end of this episode.
Sure. Well, I think her big hit, if you will, is called Tonight.
All right.
Because this is now, for me, heading into night, that would be a good one.
All right. So we're going to play out with Emrose's Tonight, and it'll cleanse the palate of what we've heard. And yeah. Troy, are you on social media? Are you on Twitter? Do you want people to follow you?
Sure.
Okay.
If you want to follow me, I have a lot of collections on Spotify. You can find me very easily on Spotify. That might be a good place to start.
And we just search your name, Troy Torreson?
Yeah, I'm the only Troy Torreson in the world.
All right. And you're a professor. So look for Professor Troy Torreson on Spotify. Kyle, what's going on with you?
Not much. Working, and that's about it.
And how long are you going to be in Texas?
Probably through the holidays, I would assume.
And through Christmas?
I think so.
And you moved down there to join a militia, correct?
I did, yeah.
All right, good. And this is your wife, Marissa, or I'll say my niece, right? I got a fucking niece now.
Yeah, your niece-in-law.
My niece-in-law. This is her time of year, Halloween, right?
Yeah.
So is trick-or-treating banned in Texas right now?
Yeah, well, her sister lives in Houston, so she's coming for the weekend, and they're going to make cupcakes and stuff.
All right, so you'll have some Halloween celebrations.
A bowl of Frankenberry, it'll be all good.
All right, you can follow Kyle at Kyle.SonFunny. You can find everything about the show at www.rocksolidpodcast.com. Kyle, do I need to say the W's anymore? No, I don't
think so.
And you can follow us on Twitter at RockSolidShow. And Troy, again, thank you so much for doing this. I will send you my address.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday. What are you going to do tonight? Anything? Is your wife going to cook you a meal?
No, we're going to order in, but we've got cake, so we're good.
All right, cool. And how old of a gentleman are you? Can I ask that?
I think we're the same age. I think we're mid-50s.
I'm 56. I'll be 57 in February.
So you're a touch older than me.
Well, you didn't have to say that, Troy. That's something I didn't need to hear.
Just a hair. We're practically the same.
Okay, cool. I will send you my address so you can send me those awesome prizes. That's terrific. And then we'll think of some type of a question for that. That's it. That's the show. Everybody enjoy Troy's daughter, Emrose, and the song is Tonight.
Could lie and say I'm fine, but that's useless. Is it the people or just stress? Makes no difference. Over there, I see your stare, and it's intriguing. Is it my eyes or the perfection of this evening? The strobe light. So tonight, I'd say I'm alive and feeling alright. Oh, tonight, I'll let loose and feel the light. It's right to be